Hi, I'm the person whose closet is put in color order, but I'll also pick up an earthworm without thinking twice. In fact, I did yesterday. It needed my help. I'm not afraid to be a little messy. Human nature is messy, but nature can help us embrace it. I love the brand Seventh Generation. Their laundry detergent lifts away tough stains with the power of bioenzymes. That's exciting. You wipe your hands on your pants after you pick up an earthworm. Seventh Generation is like, don't worry. Hug a dirty tree. Huff some bark. It's good for you. That is the power of Seventh Generation. Find laundry detergent and other laundry products at seventhgeneration.com. I love worms. So I have four nieces and nephews, and I was talking to my sister about IXL. And IXL Learning is this fun online program for kids, and it covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. My sister and my nephew love it. The way it works is it's powered by AI, so IXL gives the right help to each kid. And IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Maybe you've been looking into private tutoring, but it's out of the budget, or this is a big school year for your kiddo. So make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Ologies listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/ologies. So visit IXL.com/ologies to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Oh, hey. Hi there. It's your weird step-cousin, Allie Ward, rumbling up to the family barbecue in a Trans Am and offering you your first room temperature beer. Are you ready to get yeasty? Okay, good. So this episode touches on something that is all over and inside you, devouring your garbage. Single-celled fungus that covers every surface of the planet. Yeast. It's also in beer. And I got a hot tip by being alive, that people like beer. And so on a recent trip to Portland, I was very generously chauffeured through the woods and to the shore on a road trip by the wonderful sister duo and my own personal merch queens, Shannon Feltis and Bonnie Dutch. And they had an inn at Rogue Brewery in Newport, Oregon. I got a tour. And I sat down to chat with a microbiologist and food scientist about zymology, the study and science and practice of fermentation, people, which is how you take a sack of grain and water and turn it into dad's wash away the workday elixir. Now, before I take you on a quick tour, I want to confess two things. Number one, I used to pour beer on myself as a child in the shower. More on that in a minute. Number two, I read all your reviews on iTunes, and I silently thank each and every one of you. So this podcast is 100% independently made. A lot of people, I guess, didn't know that. So listeners pay to keep it going through life-sustaining Patreon donations at patreon.com/ologies, and also by buying merch at ologiesmerch.com, and also for supporting for free by rating and reviewing and subscribing on iTunes, which boosts it in the charts. It helps the podcast get seen by other people. So we've remained in the top 30 or so science podcasts totally independently on iTunes since September. And last week, Ologies broke its own download record. It truly means the world to me, and this project is my favorite thing I've ever worked on. So I love that you guys love the show and are spreading the word. So each week I read a snippet of a review that really made my day, and Elise1021 said, I love this podcast so much. Some episodes I start listening to and have no interest in the topic, and by the end, I'm so fascinated and intrigued. For example, I almost skipped ichthyology because fish... who cares? And that was my favorite episode to date. Okay, back to zymology. So the word comes from the Greek, naturally, for the workings of fermentation. It's pretty straightforward. Zymo. And Louis Pasteur was the first zymologist. He was the first person to get that yeasts were making fermentation happen. Oh, also, the reason I showered myself in Coors as a child is because beer was supposed to make hair shiny, and I had llama hair, and even my parents were like, sure, man, try it. Do whatever you gotta do. And it didn't work. And to be honest, I've never really loved beer. But I have mad respect for the craft of it and the bubbly, yeasty science of it. And I'm fascinated by the history and the role that beer plays in good old American culture. So I visited this brewery to find out how beer is made in both small and big scale batches, and to chat with someone who is truly, deeply knowledgeable about tiny funguses. So amid some forklift beeping and tasting room hollering in the background, we walked through a maze of like these 20-foot metal tanks storing and fermenting beers.
That's a lot of brewskis, dude.
We learned some basics.
I don't know if you hooked me.
how familiar you are with homebrewing.
No, okay. None, zero.
That's basically all the CO2 blow off. So as it's fermenting, it's bubbling out.
Yeah. So that's where it burps and farts?
Yeah, pretty much.
I sniffed some yeasts.
That's some ripe business.
And I learned that the staff of this brewery gets to pick their own titles. So I was told this by a guy named Jake, who is technically Rogue's level 10 spirits wizard. It's on his business card. He showed me a warehouse of aging whiskeys and charred oak barrels. And we won't get into that much in this episode, but I will leave you with a takeaway from him that the opening of a barrel of aging spirits is called the bunghole, and they smell delicious.
I wanted a scented candle in the flavor of bunghole.
Then our group checked out the yeast lab and sat down to a very mellow tasting.
Am I gonna get blitzed or what?
Finally, we went in for the interview and talked about the history of cold ones and how beer goes from a slurry of wet fungus in a bucket to a refreshing, cool friend in a bottle. And the grossest things you can culture and make into beers. There's some homebrewing tips, some food science triumphs, and some early names for light beer that just didn't quite cut it. So get ready to tip back this refreshing episode with zymologist Quentin Sturgeon.
My first name's John, actually, so I go by my middle name.
So,
my full name is John Quentin Sturgeon. It's not a weak name by any means.
No, it's not. Tell me what your title is here.
QAQC manager or lead, but my actual title is Minister of Truth.
Did you get to pick that?
But it was kind of given to me. They're like, you don't have a filter, so Minister of Truth.
Is it kind of like a tribal name, where it's given to you based on your characteristics?
Most people pick them themselves, so it's like a self-given nickname. And it wasn't given to me. Somebody actually mentioned it, so.
Every time you're wrong, does that really come back to bite you?
I just don't ever be wrong. Oh. But no, of course. It doesn't mean I'm correct. It means I'm just telling the truth as best I know it.
Your truth.
My version of the truth, yes.
Now, tell me about your degrees. What did you study? How long did you study it?
Yeah, so my bachelor's was in food science at University of Idaho. And then I made the epic 8-mile trek across state border to Washington State and got a master's in food science.
What does that entail, getting a master's in food science?
Laborious project that includes everything from sensory to microbiology, a lot of biochemistry. I had to resurrect an old HPLC.
What's an HPLC?
It's a high-performance liquid chromatography machine. Okay.
So Quentin has two degrees in food science, one a master's that involved analyzing amino acids in wine fermentation, but he had a history with beer and began homebrewing at 19 in his fraternity's kitchen. And he's a burly dude. He's very Pacific Northwest. He's like wearing a hoodie. He's got a beard, those Carhartt's pants, and a battered ball cap. And Quentin's worked in wheat genetics, cheese, wine, beer, kombucha, all involving, in his words, one cell critters that nobody cares about. But hello, hi, if you like cheese and beer, you have to care about these critters. They are so important. So yeast are indeed single-celled fungi, and it wasn't until the late 1800s, after Louis Pasteur, that we even knew that a living organism, a fungus, was instrumental in brewing and baking bread. And we put some shit under microscopes. We were like, whoa, huh? Well, what'd you look at that? Now, a common brewer's yeast to make ales in particular is a single round smooth, flat cell, and it's kind of a cream color. It's called Saccharomyces cerevisiae, something like that, which translates to sugar fungus of beer. So not unlike Minister of Truth, it's a good title. So what is happening? Can you walk me through what fermentation is? Like, just pretend I'm an alien that just landed on a spaceship, and my first question is like, how y'all make booze?
Yeah, well, basically you can chew something up and spit into a bucket.
Okay.
Or really, it's the conversion of sugar and starch. Well, starch goes to sugar into ethanol and carbon dioxide.
And that is done by introducing a little tiny single-celled critter?
Yep. One-celled little fungi, Saccharomyces. And we'd like to use Saccharomyces cerevisiae because it's more consistent and not nearly as temperamental and pissy as all the other yeast strains. So that's why you see that Saccharomyces cerevisiae as the go-to yeast.
Is that for wine and for beer?
It's wine and beer, but they are different strains.
So how do you choose which strain to use?
So that was what I did after grad school. That was 90% of my job, was because there's all sorts of yeast vendors out there. All these vendors have all this yeast. You don't know what is sales and marketing and what's true.
Do you have to culture them and see what eats what and what the byproducts are and what temperatures they can withstand, stuff like that?
Kind of. Basically, the best way to do it, if you're going to be doing, like, I think I did 150-something strains when I was there in just over a year, in triplicate with little bioreactors that are temperature-controlled, you take sterile juice. And you dump in the exact amount of yeast 3 times, and then you ferment it, and you track everything you can chemically before and after and during, and then you try it at the end, and basically that's it, because you worked off the same juice for all those yeast strains. You've got the same baseline, and all right, this one was farty. That one's awesome. And it's, farty is a term.
Is it really?
Yeah, hydrogen sulfide, H2S. Yeah, it is a nasty, it smells like fart.
And wait, do you use that term professionally? Like this one's
farty? It depends on how lax the panel would be.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, everything from rotten cabbage, sewer drain. Oh yeah, sensory terms get fun. Yeah.
And how do you baby vomit? When you're fermenting something and it smells like baby vomit or cabbage farts or whatever, are you making notes on smell and compounds? Are you analyzing them through your own senses or a combination of like chemical determinants and your senses?
Both. So, okay. I mean, the human nose, unless you can relate it in sensory terms, it's useless.
Right.
You tell somebody, all right, cool, you have X and X milligrams per liter of vanillin. Well, vanillin's one that, okay, no, vanilla. All right, right. That's pretty simple. Then you say isofluoric acid. Eh?
Yeah, what the hell's that?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's just it. Or, like, yeah, some of these terms, when they get just down to chemicals, I don't know, what the hell does that mean? Or where did that come from? How do I control it? Is it a good or a bad thing? It gets way too complex when you just do on the chemistry. So you focus it down into flavor buckets and just make it easy. But sensory, I don't know. Your nose is still amazing. And if you can train yourself to be as good of a machine as possible, you're setting yourself up pretty well.
Side note, isn't it weird how you smell something and it usually reminds you of your past in some way? Like, if you huff a perfume you wore freshman year of college, like, forget about it. Like, you are a slave to nostalgia for the rest of the day. So why is that? Why does that happen? So I looked it up, and smell is linked intimately to parts of the brain that deal with emotion. So you have an olfactory bulb that's part of the limbic system. And that includes the amygdala and the hippocampus of the brain. Those also deal with memory, learning, and your emotions. So in order to identify a smell, you may find that first you have to figure out, what does this remind me of, before you can figure out what the smell is. So humans have about 6 million olfactory receptors, and scientists recently learned that we can smell up to a trillion smells. But your dog, see your dog over there? Your dog has not 6 million, 300 million compared to our 6 million. So every butt sniff is like Shakespeare to them. I would now like you to imagine a dog in a lab coat, because as a food scientist, sniffing stuff, in this case yeast, super important. Dogs would be excellent at this. So when you applied for this particular job, did you come in saying, I have a lot of experience testing yeast, and they were like, we need you on our team?
I have enough jack of all trades background to be able to do something like this. But yeah, a ton of lab and micro experience. So it was like, cool, we can shove this guy in there and leave him alone.
What's your day-to-day job like?
Oh, God. It is literally one-third microbiology, one-third chemistry, and one-third sensory. And then trying to make sure we don't kill anybody by making beer or exploding bottles and that kind of stuff.
So if you have the chemistry wrong, your bottles will explode.
Not so much the chemistry, the microbiology, because then you've got potential for secondary fermentation. So when you pop that top, you might shoot a cap into the ceiling, or it will just build up so much pressure that the glass itself will shatter. And then, yeah, that, I mean, that's worst case scenario. I don't know if that's happening here, so that's good.
Can you walk me through the basics of, like, in an absolute nutshell, how is beer made?
So malt is the sugar source. We are starch, convert starch into sugars, which the yeast, which we then later add, chomps up and converts through its own metabolism from glucose and sucrose and maltose into ethanol and carbon dioxide. So then you get basically beer is yeast, farts, and piss. And other flavorings.
Okay, how much do you already love this guy? Now, I'm going to recap and give you some basics because I had to look this up after our interview and after the tour because I still didn't get it. I'm going to break it down. You're about to understand how beer is made. Are you ready? You're never going to look at beer the same way again. And next time you're at a barbecue and you have nothing to talk to anyone about, you can just tell them this. Okay, cool. So grain, like barley or wheat, is malted. And malted means it's germinated just a wee bit, and then it's kilned or heated, and that stops the germination. So doing that, germinating it and heating it, breaks down some starch into sugar. And next, it's milled or crushed so that the starches are more accessible and they're easily broken down. Water is then added, and when it's added, it's called a mashing. It's added to this big tank called a mash tun, and it's mixed with hot water, and that activates the enzymes in the grain that helps turn them from starch into sugar, and it makes this syrupy, sweet liquid called wort. And the wort is separated from all the solids left over in the grain in a process called lautering. So many terms. So the wort is then boiled for a few hours, which sterilizes it, and hops are added, giving it some bitterness, some essential oils, some flavor. And this mix is whirlpooled to collect any solids, and then it's cooled down. And finally, after malting, milling, worting, mashing, after all of that, it's ready for fungus. It's fungus o'clock. This is called pitching. Now, the cooled down wort, it's put in this big fermenter tank, and yeast is added, and it ferments anywhere from a few days to a month, depending on the beer. And the type of yeast will also determine if it's an ale or a lager. I did not know that.
Fermentation really, in the bulk of it, actually happens in the first 72 hours. But generally, we have tank times that range anywhere from 8 days to 20 plus days.
Okay. And there are hoses that run out the carbon dioxide, and it sounds kind of like a rhino farting in a bathtub.
Oh, that gurgle is very soothing.
And now you have beers. Almost.
And then basically you remove the yeast if you want. And so you get a clear product, a more stable product because of all sorts of biochemistry. But it is much more stable than it was before the yeast took effect.
And so
carbonate it up for some good mouthfeel and fizz. And there you go. That's beer. It is simple.
So you carbonate it after the fact?
Yeah. Yeah. So a good portion of the carbonation will come from natural fermentation, but not enough. It's not that lively bubble break that you experience with beer, where soda has so much more carbonation.
Yeah.
Because you do that. That's a term, is bubble pain. And it's, feel those like pop rocks, right? Exploding on your tongue.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing.
As a person who's literally drinking a LaCroix right now and trying not to burp into the microphone, I was greatly enthused about bubble pain as a term, and I looked it up giddily, and carbonation does thrill us because it triggers pain receptors on the tongue, the same ones that respond to like wasabi. Now, some people hate carbonation because it just hurts. They're like, no. But I couldn't find much mention of the specific term bubble pain. I looked it up. I was like, I thought this was a term, until I came across an article about it, but it was published by a researcher at Quentin's alma mater. So it's possible that this term is super common to Quentin in the way that, as a Northern California native, I thought everyone said hella all the time.
And so you have to strain off the yeast when you're done fermenting it to where you want it. You use a centrifuge for that?
We use our centrifuge, yeah, to just get rid of it. And it clarifies the crap out of that beer. More typical, you'll see a filter beforehand or after to really clarify it. And we do pretty well with our centrifuge, and we just run with that.
What happens to the yeast once you're like, later days, thanks?
It goes into a tote and then into a dump vessel. But that's not to say that we haven't pulled off yeast before that. And we will reuse that yeast over and over. Oh. And so once we start with a little bit, it will grow and grow and grow. Many, many babies. Uh-huh. And we harvest that off and use it again.
What does it look like? Is it like a murky? I imagine something that looks like murky yellow whale blubber.
So
you're holding up a bottle of beer, so it's kind of that murky precipitate in there.
Yeah, it just looks muddy, murky, and hazy. Just kind of all sorts of no good.
And do different beers use different yeasts, or do you use that one species and genus but a different strain for, say, a lager or IPA?
We use anywhere from 5 to upwards of whatever test batches we're doing of random idea beers, strains here at Rogue. Pac-Man is the one we use by far and away. It is a workhorse of a yeast. It can just power through a huge amount of sugar. But yeah, we definitely use them because they do different things. Some are more phenolic, more Band-Aid, more spice notes. Some are more fruity. Others are just clean and neutral. And sometimes you want that. It really depends on the style and what you're trying to go for in the finished product.
So Pac-Man is the name of a special proprietary strain that Rogue uses for a bunch of their beers. And it's supposed to be really robust and reliable. People love this. I looked online and some people try to use the dregs of other Rogue beers to culture their own Pac-Man batch. And one message board I looked at said this: Pac-Man is the most forgiving yeast ever. I had to pitch some slurry that just finished a cider ferment as an emergency measure, and it still got like 80% attenuation in an all-grain wort. What? Okay, so thanks to Quentin, I kind of know what that jargon casserole of a sentence means. So you can buy yeasts, you can try to culture them from other beers, or if you're like some wild animals, you can just wait for fruit to rot. Evidently, moose and elk eat fallen apples and they stumble around a bit. They get a little crazy. And some monkeys will eat fermented fruit and just lose it. Elephants, however, seem to be apocryphal drinkers. It's more legend than lit, because it would take so much fruit to get them drunk. But if you've ever brewed kombucha at home or wanted to, the yeast and bacteria form this symbiotic colony. It looks like a slimy pancake or a flap of skin from a dead stingray. And essentially, all you need to do is convince a hippie to give you some of their mother slop, and you dump it in a bucket of tea and sugar, and boom, a few weeks later, you have an expensive bucket of fizzy vinegar tea. I've done this, and it filled the void in my life where a pet or an alien in the cupboard should be. It tastes good, but it looks like a nightmare.
Do you ever dream about yeast?
I haven't lately.
You have?
I have, yeah. I mean, I've got a stuffed yeast on my desk.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, yeasty. He's a stuffed 1 million times size of a Saccharomyces cerevisiae. And he's got droopy little eyes, and he's got budding scars on the head. Well, I guess we call them mother cells and daughter cells, but mm-hmm. Yeah, yeasty. When I was separated, but my wife was cross-country. I was interning in California, and she was working in New York. I sent that to her as a care package.
Aww.
And she kept it and held it like every night. Which, you know, seems really, really weird. I guess I'm just that level of nerd, but I did propose to her after we saw each other that summer. So
really?
Yeah.
And it was part of your wooing. You're like, here's a stuffed yeast, think about me.
Yeah,
that's cute.
Thinking about it, that's kind of weird.
No, it's adorable. Did you grow things and culture things when you were a kid? What kind of kid were you?
No, I definitely, I had a microscope, mm-hmm. but I was kind of like, well, these are like really funny names and hard to remember. Mm. I wasn't all that interested in it, to be honest. I don't know. I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do going into, well, in high school. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mowed lawns. I mean, I paid for my undergrad by mowing lawns.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. I was like 11 years old. My dad's like, hey, you're going to pay for college. So right there, it says two things aside. Number one, I'm going to college. Mm-hmm. That's not an option to not. And I was going to pay for it. So, all right, cool. 11-year-old walks across the street, starts mowing lawns.
Where did you put all the money? Into a banking account?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just straight savings and yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Are your parents proud of what you do?
I think so.
That sound in the background is a level 10 spirits wizard cackling at Quentin.
Yeah.
Your buddy's laughing at you.
I know. I don't know. I haven't heard like, we're proud of you, son. You get everyone drunk. You make the world a better place. I'm so proud of you.
But you have a laboratory.
I do.
And a master's.
And a master's degree. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they have anything to... I think they're more proud of the grandkids I've given them.
Did your wife wish that she could just butt off a baby, like a yeast?
Yeah. Pregnancy was rough. It wasn't fun. She had to deliver like a champ. But,
oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
like, poster child. But, no, pregnancy was rough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was beer helpful afterward?
Some beers.
She's not a big drinker.
She's not. Your wife is not a big drinker.
She's not a big drinker. When she does, it's more the sour tart stuff, which, I mean, she can peel and eat a lemon. I know. That's the face I make when she does it. It's like, this is unbelievable. Good God. I just hear your enamel screaming. But no, so, I mean, we started making Paradise Pucker, which is a sour base, and she loves that beer. But she's just not a huge drinker, so... Yeah, there's
more
that.
For you.
I know, right?
I'm going to ask you some questions from listeners. Is that
sure.
cool?
Yeah.
Okay. Because there's approximately 1 million of them. But before we take questions from you, our beloved listeners, we're going to take a quick break for sponsors of the show. Sponsors? Why sponsors? You know what they do? They help us give money to different charities every week. So if you want to know where Ologies gives our money, you can go to alleyward.com and look for the tab Ologies Gives Back. There's like 150 different charities that we've given to already, with more every single week. So if you need a place to go donate a little bit of money, but you're not sure where to go, those are all picked by ologists who work in those fields. And this ad break allows us to give a ton of money to them. So thanks for listening and thanks, sponsors. Okay. What do you get for the mom who birthed you into the world? I know, a candle. Are you like, no, that's not quite enough. How about memories that she'll love looking at every day? Aura frames? I love them. So they're a digital photo frame. They were named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and by me. And Aura frames are Wi-Fi connected. You can add unlimited photos and videos, and you can invite as many people as you want to the frame. There are absolutely no hidden fees. There's no subscriptions. You can also react with cute emojis if you'd like, and you can show you love a photo. You can send congratulations or more. It's so wonderful that A, it's not a candle, and also it's not sharing your photos on social media to look at. It's just there. You can share it with the people who you love. I have mentioned this so many times, but my parents have an Aura that I got them. My dad loved that. I have gotten Aura frames for friends, for family members of friends. So I'm a really big fan of them. I love what they do. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. So that's AuraFrames.com. Use the code Ologies at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. I love these things. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. And y'all know I have a little dog named Gremmy, which is short for Gremlin. And y'all helped me name her. And there's nothing that we like more than seeing her happy, which means tasty dog foods. And Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. They were founded in Hereford, Texas. But Gremmy doesn't care about that. She cares about smushing her face in it and then licking the bowl. And I don't blame her, because they use real ingredients and home-style recipes like real Texas beef and sweet potato or Grammy's pot pie. Grammy's like, Grammy's pot pie. Get away from it. It's mine. I also like that on the bag, they show what's in it. And they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And I think Grammy appreciates that. So check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. Yum, 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 yum. I know I usually save my secrets for the end of the episode, but I'm going to tell you my secret favorite candy. It's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. It's really Reese's anything, but Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the thing that I'm like, have I had a bad day? I get these. Have I had a good day? I get these. Chocolate, salty peanut butter, the textures. I love everything about them. Also that there's two. So I'm like, oh, I get this one for later, which is 1 second later. Anyway, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, I love you. That's all. If you're me, you can shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold, and I am. Oh, hi, it's me, the lady that checks a bunch of scholarly articles before she believes anything, Allie Ward. And I feel like we are similar in that we have a fair amount of skepticism and we like to dive deep and find out what the actual facts are. This is why when it comes to any kind of supplements, I enjoy Ritual, which is a female-founded B Corp, meaning that they're holding themselves accountable to not just the company, but also to the health of people in our planet. And they're clinically backed Essential for Women 18+ multivitamin. It has these high-quality, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms that are clean.
Only about 1% of supplement brands are USP verified, and Ritual is one of them. So I like being able to trust what I'm putting in my body. From an aesthetic standpoint, I'll also tell you that Ritual are beautiful little vitamins. They look like lava lamps and they taste like mint. So taking my Ritual is part of my, I guess, morning ritual. That's probably why they named it that, and I didn't even think about it. Anyway, no more shady business. Ritual's essential for women 18 plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. So get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/ologies. You can start Ritual or add essential for women 18 plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/ologies for 25% off. Down the hatch. Your questions.
This is a rapid fire round. Greg wants to know, any secret yeasts that might make for better fermenting beers?
Try everything you can from wherever you can get it. There's a lot at places at homebrew stores. That or try culturing your own. See what's growing out in it. Yeah, see what happens. What's the worst? You just make a terrible batch of beer and then you dump it, clean everything, and start over.
Well, how do you know that you even have yeast? You just put the wort out and see what happens?
Well, a couple of steps. Like, you can easily get stuff to get your own petri dish set up and just to start culturing. I mean, you can be into it for less than $50.
Whoa.
Yeah. You just need a couple of glassware and you just make a small little batch of wort. Set it out in an orchard or something like that and throw it on some dishes. There's some technique to it, but it's not impossible.
Wow. DIY yeast.
It's a thing.
Bob Ogden wants to know, when and where did hops come from in brewing? Are hops used for any other purpose? Do we even use hops? What are hops doing the rest of the time?
Good question. Well, I guess they're kind of an offshoot of hemp. And so I believe they were at one point used for rope along those lines. They're also like a subset of like pot.
Really?
I think they're somehow related to marijuana, but I don't. You're going to have to fact check me on that one.
Side note. So hops, a.k.a. humulus lupulus, I think that's what they're called, and marijuana are indeed related, but instead of getting you all stony baloney, hops were cultivated for use in beer as early as the 9th century because they have these acids and essential oils that prevent spoilage. They also give beer that traditional bitter taste that a lot of people who are not me like. Is now an okay time to tell you I've never finished a beer? Maybe once I finished a beer. I've started a lot of beers, but I really appreciate the craftsmanship.
Adrian McNichols wants to know, is it true that stouts and porter are good sources of dietary item, i.e. is my beer health food?
There was a guy who lived off nothing but Guinness for a month.
Really?
And it's totally doable. Yeah. Especially unfiltered because you have the pro and prebiotics of yeast.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, people have done it. It's got a ton of nutrients in there. It's got to be doing something weird to your system after a while.
Did he take a sabbatical from pooping? What was the deal there?
I don't know. Okay. I don't just like when you're on a juice diet, you're not getting a lot of fiber that way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's all pure liquid.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Was this guy? Was this someone you knew or was this just
a
guy?
This is not Larry from my freshman year. No, okay. I'd heard this. This is like, this, I don't know. It's a thing.
Find him.
Oh, yeah.
I'll look it up.
Okay, so the Guinness diet is a thing. And though I found accounts of one super devout Christian / beer lover giving up food in favor of beer for 40 days of Lent, I guess he was inspired by monks, he did not seem to be drinking Guinness per se. So with a Guinness diet, with a stout, you'd need to drink 47 pints of Guinness a day to get your caloric needs met. This was calculated by a 170-pound dude who tried it. Plus, to fulfill your daily nutritional requirements, you would need to drink a glass of orange juice for vitamin C and 2 glasses of milk for calcium. So I looked up records of people who have tried this, and one account, which ran in a newspaper article in the Sonoma Sun, contained a diary from which I will read an excerpt. Day 3. At one point, after enough people told me that I look like I'm dying, it all became clear. I know what hell is. Hell is a giant party where you can drink all the Guinness you want, but only your friends can eat the delicious feast, and they will laugh at you, and they will constantly make comments like, you look like you're dying. Another man tried the Guinness diet and reported that after having a couple of lunch beers, quote, my stomach was starting to make noises comparable to the dragons on Game of Thrones. Now, it should be noted that both dudes who wrote their trials up of this broke down around day 4 or 5 and ravenously purchased and bought candy bars. One was a Snickers and one was a Mars bar. So unless you are deeply alcoholic or religious, you may want to just do like Slim Fast or step up the cardio, buddy.
Caitlin Thomas wants to know, why does beer have to have so many carbs?
Well, that's the whole idea between a light beer, right? You're trying to get those carbs out. It's just a matter of what you use as your sugar source, and what's going to be left over the yeast is not going to consume. And so that's, and it's one of those factors. If you want to have less carbs in your beer, you got to use a yeast strain and set it up that it's going to ferment out pretty dry. But at the same time, carbs are a complete balance of all the other flavors. So without carbs, you're just going to have a boozy, watered-down, unbalanced hot mess. Yeah, like that is totally they're necessary. I mean, it's the sugar, it's all the sweet, and a lot of the malty biscuit flavor, it's all from the malt and the carbs.
So, do light beers, have they been fermenting longer, or do they just add water to a regular beer?
It's a different sugar source, so it ferments out cleaner, and so okay. You end up having just more ethanol and more CO2, so it's more efficiently converted.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of other technology into it, but I mean, so that's why it was a big thing when it hit the market. I think Miller Lite was the first one.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, like I knew what he was talking about, but I did not know. However, after doing some light Googling, I have learned that this beer, Miller Lite, was invented in 1967, but was originally called Gablinger's Diet Beer. So they tweaked the marketing because, I mean,
it was pretty revolutionary to actually be able to have a beer around 100 calories.
Right. I love that, like, Michelob Ultra is like, if you like CrossFit and beer. You're like, okay.
It's like, no, I'm sorry, those, you don't exist.
Brittany Crisera wants to know, what ingredient is it that makes the yeast occasionally go seemingly crazy and foam up and explode during first fermentation? Asking for a friend. Also, do you have any tips for new brewers or book recommendations?
Yeah. So that explosive early fermentation, we have it. I mean, we'll blow over our tubs, and we use 55-gallon drums as our blow off. But it depends largely on how much protein was in the initial fermentation and then how much yeast they added. If they added just too much, your fermentation just went crazy. And that yeast is just really, really, really active. So there's a couple ways to get around that is get a bigger vessel so all that foam breaks off or just stays in the vessel. Or don't add as much yeast. Or keep it in a bathtub with some ice. Chill it down. Because, I mean, during fermentation, there's a lot of heat generated as well. Mm-hmm. So you have to chill that down. Otherwise, it will just run off and real fast.
Is it better to homebrew if you're new at it during the winter months than in the summer?
Oh, I don't know. If you've got an inkling to do it at all, just do it. But, I mean, as far as going back to the tips for homebrewers, sanitation. Got to be clean. And if you think you're clean, do it again. I've had so much bad homebrew because they didn't clean something properly, or they I just ran bleach through it.
No, you're shaking your head.
It's just not enough. I mean, you got to do it right.
What happens if you don't brew it clean? Does it start to, does the wrong thing ferment? Does it smell skunky? Okay.
So you've set yourself up for any and everything to have access to all that sugar, all those free amino acids, and they're going to go crazy. And so that's why Saccharomyces cerevisiae was started to use, because it's such an active fermenter. It'll just attack, and it'll drive out and out-compete most other things. So that's why it's really, really beneficial to use a good, healthy yeast. But sanitation, it's kind of key, because you don't want, like, an acetobacter. Acetobacter makes acetic acid.
Oh.
Which is vinegar.
Yeah.
Or, like, a lactic acid bacteria, or pediococcus, which makes lactic acid. It's not as tart, but it still will ruin a beer. And it's like sour milk. It is.
Pediococcus.
Pediococcus.
It's on my shit list. Get out of here.
It's on mine too. Yeah.
Are you clean at home? Are you a neat freak at home? Or are you like,
I'm not.
Not?
Like, the worst is the kitchen sink. And my wife will rip, and she does totally rip me a new one. And it is the dirtiest place in your house.
Oh, say it isn't so. No. Ugh. Okay. So I have often heard and feared this about kitchen sinks, and I had to look it up, y'all. And according to Dr. Charles Gerba, one microbiologist who's been studying invisible American domestic filth for decades, your sink and sponge are like Bonnaroo, a witch's brew of fecal bacteria, protozoans, and viruses. So he says that the cleanest looking kitchens are often the dirtiest because clean people wipe up so frequently it's like painting a swath of bacteria like Bob Ross laying down the background of a gorgeous landscape. Now, amusingly, some of the cleanest kitchens, Dr. Gerba claims, are in the homes of bachelors who rarely wipe up their countertops. He says, in most cases, it's safer to make a salad on a toilet seat than it is to make one on a cutting board. So what are we supposed to do? Well, you can either microwave your sponge for a few minutes and kill all that stuff, or you can survive off beer and Snickers. I'm going to leave it up to you.
But in your lab...
Oh, in the lab, yeah, that's a completely different story. So I get all my neat freak out of my system here and then go home and just like a slob.
Oh, God, that would drive me crazy. That would, because it's be like, I know you have a master's in science. Like, I know you know how to wash these dishes. Megan Gerard wants to know, I heard that we have found ancient civilizations had beer recipes. Do we know if that was because they couldn't prevent it? Like there was no refrigeration? Or did they do it on purpose? Are they any good? Ancient beer, I understand, was because the water was so disgusting that they're like, we got to have this stuff that has alcohol in it so it can kill the bacteria. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, you actually do really, you help yourself out from you killing like things like Enterobacter, E. coli.
Side note, them bacteria is poo.
That kind of stuff, because it can't survive in that low pH. It can't survive with a little bit of alcohol in there. Hops were added way after the fact. I mean, we're talking beer 4,000 years old, at least. Mm-hmm. We haven't known what the hell we were doing, except until Pasteur came by. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, this is not just God blessing you with this alcohol. It's, no, it's yeast. It's yeast, piss, and farts. And that's what you get.
Little tiny single cell farts.
Yeah, pretty much. But I don't know. I have heard of some people trying to recreate really ancient beers and then kind of being... So.
Yeah.
But you're also kind of like, I don't really know how they did it.
Okay. So a little beer history. It could have been invented up to 10,000 years ago when agriculture was first starting out around Mesopotamia. And bread yeasts were fermented into this drinkable, potable, I guess I use that loosely, concoction. So early beers were often really thick, like more of a gruel, like a soupy oatmeal. And drinking straws were used so that you wouldn't get the chunky bits. How gross is that? According to Wikipedia, though, in ancient Mesopotamia, the majority of brewers were probably ladies. Brewing was a fairly well-respected occupation during the time. And then at some point, it became less chunky and, I guess, more manly. From a societal standpoint.
Brian Edge wants to know, is it true that there's a hops shortage or an impending one? And if so, what effect would that have on the brewing industry?
There certainly was. Okay. I think, was it Yakima 6-10 years ago, somewhere in that range? One warehouse had, I think, 1/3 of the entire United States hop harvest in just the one building, and it burnt down.
Oh my God.
Overnight. Everyone's scrambling and hosed. So that immediately bumped beer prices up, and they just have never really gone down.
How insane is that? Okay, well, evidently it happened again just this past December in another hops warehouse in Yakima. Now, before you open up your own arson investigation detective agency, apparently these things just happen. Acids in the hops break down, and the hops heat up to the point where they just burst into flames. So things like this are why beer can cost you some money.
Is it cheaper to brew your own beer?
Yeah, totally. Depends on what you throw into it. Mm. If you're throwing in like rice syrup solids as your base fermentable, that's fairly cheap.
Okay.
But you're not going to get a lot of flavor out of that. And so you get what you pay for, and you get what you pay to put into it, too.
PJ Anderer wants to know, what's happening to a beer when I bury it in my yard and wait to drink it for several years?
It's probably not going to taste all that good.
Okay.
It's just because of the aging cycle. It's not good. Time is not good to beer.
Okay.
There's a couple of places that on the label is best yesterday. You know, which is totally true. I mean, the best way to have the best beer is keep it cold and drink it fast. I mean, some beers are meant to age, like a barley wine.
Side note, I did not know what barley wine was. I pretended to during the interview, but I just looked it up and it's technically a beer. It just has such a high alcohol concentration, like 8-12%, that it's called a wine. So barley wine, it's barely wine.
We did a flight of barley wine, our old crusty. I think the oldest bottle we opened was 20 years old.
Oh, eBay.
And we jumped every 4 years so good.
Okay.
It was so good.
But that's on purpose. That's on...
That was totally on purpose. Okay. Yeah, yeah. If you bury it in your yard, you're going to have incredible temperature fluctuations. Hell, if it freezes, you might just shatter that bottle.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah. So okay. That would be my concern on that one.
All right. So no buried treasure. Jude Kenny wants to know, is there a particular region in the U.S. that's favorable for open fermentation? Like, are there better airborne yeast in certain regions?
No. Well, yeah, it depends on what is around you. I mean, if you're by orchards and a lot of agriculture, mm-hmm. there's just a lot more stuff on those leaves, especially yeast. So, I mean, if you're near a vineyard, there's a ton of yeast that lives outside of grapes, on the surface of them. Mm-hmm. That stuff's going to get flown off in the wind. So you got a better chance of at least getting a yeast, but
capturing good ones.
Yeah, well, also bad ones. So that's a mixed bag.
Oh, that's risky.
It is super risky. I mean, open fermentations are they're just risky because you don't know what you're going to get. And you're also going to get a lot of bacteria.
Okay, quick aside. In 2013, Rogue Brewery was looking to make a beer with a wild yeast. And they tried some open fermentations in some nearby orchards, but didn't come up with much. They were like, So it's a semi-joke. They tried to culture some yeast using 12 beard hairs of their brewmaster. This wild yeast, the wildest of yeasts, really ended up being a pretty good fit to culture. And genetically, they found out it was a hybrid between the brewery's Pac-Man yeast and some new strain. So they made a beer out of it. They put the beer on the market and people liked it, saying it had a sweet, bready, pineapple-y, and oddly olive-like notes. So the idiom to get a wild hair will never be the same to me. But you can open, ferment, or try wild strains. It just might not be for beginners.
Is it better to get a kit and try to culture something and see what happens?
It is. Definitely, if you're just getting started, buy something that's already cultured. Okay. And that way you can't really screw it up.
Okay.
I mean, you can.
Start slow.
But, yeah, get into it. And then to culture your own yeast, that's like just jumping in.
Okay. That's
a couple steps.
But in general, near an orchard would be a good place for open fermentation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Carrie Stewart wants to know, do craft brewers maintain their own hops and yeast strains like proprietary blends, or are they like sourdough starters that get passed around and shared among other brewers?
So you can buy Pac-Man.
Pac-Man?
Yeah, you can actually go buy the yeast that we use from the majority of our beers and use it in a homebrew. Huh. Yeah, but it is like something that we definitely use. Others, I think Beard was the only one that was proprietary. We don't do that here, but a lot of breweries will. And they will make their own yeast and keep it completely in-house. They'll go from frozen culture all the way to pitch and use that and never have to buy yeast from anywhere else.
So remember, to pitch just means to add yeast. There's so many terms. But now you can throw them around like you know what they mean. Old Ward over here will not blow your cover.
Sarah Nichelle Welch wants to know, why do beers have different percentages of alcohol to them?
Different styles, it's appropriate, and it will match better with the flavor profile, the balance of it. So some will have a little bit more malt, and that can handle a little more alcohol, or a little more sugar that can handle more alcohol. It does change up the mouthfeel as well.
And then, so mouthfeel is the viscosity, and bubble pain is the carbonation.
Yeah.
These are good terms. Any other weird terms that I should know about?
Oh, let's see. Drinkability.
What the hell does that mean?
Exactly. See, that's why I had to take it off the sensory form, because everyone kept like, well, yeah, I could pound six of these. That's not what that means.
So drinkability does not mean poundability, but rather what is the arc of the beer when you first take a sip, and then when it warms up a little on your tongue, and then the lingering aftertaste. And is it all good? Great. That's drinkability. Also, while editing this, I started to imagine that Quentin was a Muppet. I think his voice lends itself well to Muppetness. Just picture it. He has a high degree of listenability.
When you're having to test beers for your job, are you spitting them or are you getting hammered at 2 in the afternoon?
good call on the time. That's actually when we do it. No, we only give 2 ounces and 6 samples, eight samples at max. So
okay. At
most you've got 10 ounces and you're not getting hammered.
Okay.
No, I mean, nobody walks around here annihilated afterwards. And there's always spit cups. You always have to give spit cups just in case.
Just in case someone wants to.
Just in case.
Seems insulting. Stefan Titus wants to know, how do you keep your records organized? And are you a naturally organized person? We did talk about your cleanliness, but how do you...
Yeah, right.
Do you have log books? What's happening?
So how do you keep track of millions of yeast pets? Or I guess livestock, if you want to look at them that way.
Yeah, no, so it depends on... Every company does it a little different. We're still on the Excel paper route. And we definitely want to get away from that as soon as possible because it is kind of a nightmare of this Excel file labeled this and yada, yada. I mean, Excel is great for what it does. It's not a good database.
Yeah.
It can't handle a lot of data.
But database is on your Christmas list.
Lab information management system is on my wish list.
Caitlin Plate wants to know, are food scientists common to find working in breweries, or is it still overrun by a lot of engineers? She's a future food scientist who would love a job at a brewery.
Fishing.
Smiley face.
You know, actually, there's more and more universities actually coming out with specific brewing programs.
Oh.
Yeah. When I was going to undergrad, I really wasn't thinking of brewing right off the gate. I was thinking of med school, and then I realized I didn't like people that much. And then I was like, all right, what am I going to do with a microbiology degree? And so I hopped into food science because you could be an ice cream scientist. Come on.
You can do that?
Hells yeah. Somebody's got to do that. Actually, ice cream is really complex as a food base. It is a good jack-of-all-trades degree. Is to do food science, you've got physics, microbiology, chemistry, and a lot of sensory. So you can kind of walk in and to anywhere.
Oh, this is a good question about selecting a beer. Becca wants to know, with a vast number of beers these days, how do I navigate them all? My BF, either best friend or boyfriend, and I were talking last night, and he said there are too many beers. So much is good that nothing is standing out anymore. So how does one make choices in this oversaturated market of local breweries, microbreweries, and limited editions? Too much of a good thing? What's to be done?
Pick a brewery. Just stick there. Rogue has everything you need.
Kidding aside, both Jake and Quentin essentially say, try to fund the local guys. That's one angle.
Two more questions. What do you hate about your job or your life or brewing or yeast? Or is there a certain moment... Yeah. Of your day, or is there a thing you're, fuck this?
Yeah, there's one moment every damn morning when I show up and I have to open the incubator and look at those petri dishes. We got anything?
Yeah.
God, I hope not. It really, basically, the way I set up the quality program, it's if something grows, it probably shouldn't have been there unless it was the yeast we were looking for. And that's when we were making the beard yeast, or beard beer. That bastard, it was technically a wild yeast. And so it was resistant to all the plates I would put it on. If I didn't know exactly what it looked like, that crusty little bastard, I would have a freak out, like a conniption fit. Like, we've got a wild yeast, and it's gone through the package line, and oh my God, every gasket in the building is going to have to be completely replaced, and we're going to be shut down for weeks. And I'd have that little moment. By the time something could grow on a petri dish, it could be in North Carolina.
So for quality control, which is a huge part of Quentin's job, he has to keep reference samples of every batch that goes into a bottle or can so he can verify in case they do have an issue with one. So they have an area of the brewery that's like a library of beers, and they have samples of a bunch of recent brews in the lab.
So when you open up that thing, you're just hoping. It's like anxiety.
Yeah, I don't want to smell anything funky. That's for damn sure.
One of the things that might be funky is something called 4-ethylphenol, which is created by a spoilage yeast.
What does that smell like?
Poop.
Okay.
Yeah, just like straight poop.
There's so many reasons why you don't want to smell that in the morning.
Or baby vomit, or Brettanomyces is a really, really bad one. Because it's just a bugger to get rid of if we ever had it. It's horse blanket and Band-Aid and barnyard.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of bad. And it has shut down wineries. So, I mean, there's a hit list of crap I don't want to ever see in this brewery. That's one of them. It's on my shit list.
What's the best part of your job?
The complete randomness of the day. Well, I mean, I've got it structured. So when it is day in, day out, like, that's really, really awesome. But I never know what new project they're going to throw at me. So, I get pulled in all sorts of different directions, and I kind of have to be the master of all around here.
I think Quentin's trying to say that he likes the variety, even though it's hard. I asked the level 10 spirits wizard, Jake Holshue, and he said that the coolest thing about being a distiller is when he hosts a cocktail event or a whiskey release, and he gets to see a whole room of people enjoying themselves as part of the fruits of his labor. or I guess the spoiled fruits of his labor, put in a good way. He says that's more rewarding for me than drinking himself. Although Jake also referenced that meme, the this is what my friends think I do, this is what my parents think I do, this is what I actually do. And he says what he actually does is clean. He says whenever you look at brewing or distilling, controlling yeast and bacterial growth is so important that brewers are almost just glorified dishwashers. I'm going to quote him directly. He said, I mean, we just clean, 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 sanitize, clean, and then we clean, then we sanitize and clean, and then we sanitize. Quentin, of course, echoed this fact of zymology.
So, like, I don't know if you're aware of this, but 90% of a brewer's job is cleaning stuff.
I just heard that.
It is totally true. Industry-wide, turnover is pretty high. Because everyone's like, I'm going to work at a brewery, and I'm going to make beer. So, I mean, somebody's got to clean those kegs. Somebody's got to make the cardboard box. And otherwise, the whole thing collapses. And so, you can never complain about working too hard because somebody else is doing another really hard job. Especially around here, because... Yeah, you are cleaning stuff. You're moving stuff. You're lifting kegs.
You're not just kicking back on a porch drinking beer all day. If you had any advice for someone who wants to be a professional brewer or a professional food scientist in general, what's the most important piece? And then I'll let you go since I've been asking you 1 million questions.
last week I was here 15 hours on Friday, so don't even worry about it. is get into a lab. Or get into whatever you think you're going to do as soon as possible. Find out what your passion is. Get involved as soon as possible.
Will you ever call yourself a zymologist? I think you should start.
I don't know.
I love that you can call yourself the minister of truth or a wizard, but a zymologist is a stretch.
I don't know.
Well, you're the most knowledgeable zymologist I've ever met, so cheers to that. Thank you so much for being on.
No. I'm glad we can nerd out.
Cheers to yeast.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything else in there.
Don't say that.
To see photos of me and Quentin Sturgeon, you can head to my Instagram at Ologies. The podcast is also on Twitter at Ologies, and I'm on both as Allie Ward with one L. Thank you so much to Shannon Feltis and Bonnie Dutch again for hooking this interview up and driving me to Newport and hanging out and getting Dutch Brothers coffee and burgers, and to Jay Kolshue and Quentin Sturgeon for the fungus chats and the really memorable We'll Never Forget tour. Thank you also to everyone for supporting on Patreon. Again, it's an independent podcast, and you can become a patron for as little as 25 cents an episode, and you can have your questions asked to the ologists. Plus, you can see more photos from the Rogue Tour, and I put up videos every once in a while to say hi. You can also support the podcast by getting yourself some Ologies merch, like some awesome shirts and hats and totes and pins. That's at ologiesmerch.com. You can join up with other ologites in the Facebook group. Thank you to Ernie and Hannah for adminning. And thank you, as always, to Stephen Ray Morris for doing a bang-up job editing as I record these asides several days later than usual because I was traveling for a family emergency and my folks were stuck in a bit of a blizzard up north and I got hella behind. Thank you again so much for listening. If you like the podcast, you can always support for free by rating and reviewing on iTunes. That helps so much. And please do remember, just ask smart people dumb questions, you guys. Because if you're curious, it's never a dumb question. And someone else is probably wondering the exact same thing and is like, oh, I'm so glad you asked. And as a thank you for sticking it through to the credits, I usually reward you with one heinous secret from my life. And I'm going to tell you two. Number one, I love eating smoked oysters from a can. I think they're good. I love them. And two, the last few houses and apartments I've lived in, I've written notes and I've tucked them into hidden places. And I always wonder when someone will find them. And I hope at least like a decade goes by. Because if you find like a 2-month-old wistful farewell note, it's kind of embarrassing. Like if you're pulling away the moving truck and like the new tenant finds this, like, it's the year 2018 and I used to live here note, like with still wet ink tucked behind a cupboard. That's just embarrassing. But I do wonder if anyone's found any of the notes I've hidden in any of the apartments or houses I lived in. And I also wonder if there are any notes lurking behind any weird floorboards around me right now. Well, isn't that weird? Have you ever done that? Anyway, okay, bye-bye.
Pachydermatology, homeology, cryptozoology.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.